Hello, I'm Sam Clements, and welcome to The Love of Cinema, a Picture House podcast. This is a special mini-episode to celebrate the release of Prano Bailey Bond's film Censor. Had its world premiere at the Sundance Film Festival in Utah, and it's just had its UK premiere at the Sundance London Film Festival at our very own Picture House Central. When Neve Algar said she was available and up for talking to us, we jumped at the chance. I love Neve Algar in her film last year called Calm With Horses. If you haven't seen that, highly recommend it. And in Censor, she is the lead character, so gets to do even more great work on screen. She's the focus of the movie. So here is the full interview with Neve. You may have heard a shortened version of this on our August show. If you haven't listened to our August show, I recommend going back. We've got a whole load more films and chat, and our two guest hosts, Beth Webb and Karina Andrebus, take us through the big films for August at Picture House Cinemas. Enough admin from me. Here is my full chat with Neve Algar, star of Censor, in cinemas right now. I know you're a cinema fan. Have you had a chance to go back much since cinemas have reopened?
Yeah, I was literally in Picture House Central last weekend watching Black Widow.
Oh my God.
That was the first film that I've seen back. I got back to London 2 weeks ago. I was filming in South Africa. And so, yeah, I was like the day after I was allowed to be out in public and, you know, tested and everything. Well, I went straight into the cinema.
That's a great thing to do.
Yeah. Picture House Central. I'll tell you the stories. Picture House Central, when I first moved to London, was the first building that I went into. I got off the plane, got into the city, and I was waiting for my friend to come and meet me to bring me to the flat I was going to live in. And he said, meet you at Picture House Central, sent me the address. And I went up to the roof. And wow. I remember standing on the roof in Picture House Central looking out into London. It was an amazing day. And I was like, I'm home. I'm genuinely home. This is the city that I'm going to live in.
That's awesome. And you're right, that view is incredible. I'm glad it made you feel so welcome. Before we Picture House took over the cinema, that just used to be a storeroom, that balcony. So that was just full of like cans of Coke and stuff. No. Why would you waste that view for the people who had it previously? that's great. And what was it like being, you know, just watching a film surrounded by people, you know, being back at the big screen? How did that make you feel?
You forget just how immersive cinema is, that you go into a theater and the outside world doesn't exist. And I think you can only kind of create that in a movie theater, that you are stepping into the world of that story. And I think that, I know we've all kind of created our home little mini cinemas now at home, and everyone's probably invested in a brand new sofa, but you don't get the same experience of actually sitting down with an audience and like vibing off of like reading the room. And, you know, if you forget that, like, it's theatrical, it's like a play. And so I'm excited to, I know that Prano watched Censor with an audience in the BFI for the first time a few weeks ago, and she said, like, it's just amazing to feel when people respond to different lines of dialogue or moments in it that you have forgotten about because you've been sitting with those, with that story for so long. So yeah.
And every audience is different, of course. Mm. So you might get some audiences who respond differently to certain bits, who would censor, maybe are a bit, you know, sort of freaked out by certain moments, yeah, or find certain bits funny, and some who won't.
Yeah, well, that's what Prana said, is that you can read comments online about when you know the film premiered at Sundance. It's always really, it's so nice to be able to actually speak face to face with someone and have that initial kind of response about how someone genuinely felt about something. Like for me, like going to the cinema, it was always such an event. Like you go, get your popcorn, get your drink, sit down, and then afterwards just digest what you've just seen. And it's an experience. It's not just kind of passive watching.
It's I think that's why cinemas lasted for so long. You know, like you know, it's great having a big TV at home and, you know, super fast internet, but seeing it with an audience, you know, actually like that, you know, you've taken time out of your day. You've maybe traveled for an hour, half an hour to get to the movies. You've paid hard cash to go and watch something, you know, that you're committed to watch this. So I think that's really special. It must be so, I guess, with because of, you know, current situation and the way Censor premiered at Sundance online this year, actually having the theatrical rollout 6 months later, it must be sort of a bit different to how things usually happen. Normally, big red carpet, cinema screenings, and then people do the home viewing thing a lot later on in a film's life.
Yeah, and I suppose that a lot of places now are doing kind of day for day and in the cinema, but also, like, I know that Black Widow did that with Disney. And so I suppose that, like, there is good and bad. It means that, you know, viewing films and especially independent films becomes more accessible. And so it broadens the audience for it. So, like I said, like, this is a movie that I feel was made for the cinema. Annika Summerson, our DOP, has created this, you know, it was shot on 35mm. And come on, you want to see a movie that's shot in film in the cinema.
I was wondering, with Pranu, this is her first sort of feature length movie. What was how did you get involved? How did you first talk to Pranu and what was that conversation like?
So the casting came in and I was asked to self tape and I saw that Pranu's name was on, obviously attached to direct. And I was like, I know that name. And we'd actually met about 8 months previous at the Screen International Screen Stars of Tomorrow event. Both of us were selected in the same year and we ended up sitting beside each other at this event. Michael Shannon was at the same event. He was as a guest and everyone was sat at Michael's table, and then me and Pranu was stuck with me, unfortunately. So I was just fascinated by just her knowledge of the film industry. She's coming at it with an extensive knowledge of writing, editing, from an actress point of view. I always think that this doesn't feel like a first-time feature film. It just so happens to be her debut feature. It's interesting because someone said to me, like, how would you describe this movie? And I was like, it's a Pranu Bailey Bond movie. It has its own original signature stamp. And if you don't know what that means, I think just watch it and you will know. She has such a unique eye on storytelling and creating character that you haven't seen done before. And I think that what's so interesting about Enid is that this is a very unique perspective of a character who's going on this psychological journey and using the medium of genre. And for her, like, Pranu is obviously a huge genre fan, and this is a total love letter to that. And so for me, working on a film with Pranu, especially, she's just so passionate. And when you see someone who is that passionate, you can't help that passion is so, it's so infectious. And so being in that environment with her, this crew that she had assembled, it was amazing. I wish I could go back and do it again. She probably wouldn't say that. She'd be like, it took long enough to bloody make me calm down. Yeah.
Sounds like you formed a really great partnership with Pranu and the rest of the crew.
Yes. No, we did. Like I said to her, it was like, you're not going to talk to me now because you go into the edit. I always find that, like, directors, you can't help but form a strong bond with people that you trust. You have to, like, build this level of trust with a director and with other cast, because you're on something like this that is so emotionally driven. You're preparing to go to a quite an emotionalist place for it with your character, and to do that in, you know, surrounded by other people, that they have to make you feel safe. And so by doing that, it's just forming bonds, and myself and Pranu naturally formed this bond, and I consider a really good friend of mine. And I'm very lucky that I'm in a profession that forces people to form bonds.
I've spoken to Pranu a few weeks ago, and she loves horror. It was really infectious. Did Pranu give you any homework, make you watch any films before going into this?
Yeah, there was a Dropbox file that she kept on adding to, and it was like my homework. I was away filming in Cape Town at the time, and so I'd like log into the Dropbox and there'd be like 20 more movies that were added. The Piano Teacher was one, more from tonally, from a character, and Black Swan also from that idea of that there's just a psychological journey that the character goes on and the blurred lines between reality and fiction. But also, like, on the horror side of it, we were looking at a horror called Let's Scare Jessica to Death, and she wanted me to watch, but there was also from the video nasty world of some of the movies that Enid would have been watching during when we were filming. Cannibal Holocaust was one. It was like scene specific that we kind of plucked out and used so that we had something to actually react to. And if not, we could reference it. So there was all, like, she thought of everything. There was no, what I loved about it is that the confidence that you have in a director who has explored every kind of possible detail in the story and in the character. And when you do that, you can just trust them and take the direction as God's words. So yeah,
it sounds like you're in quite a watertight kind of situation there. You know, like Prano has lived this and breathed this and knows exactly what she wants.
Yeah, I think you have to respect that. You know, it's essentially the movie is the director's vision of the story that they're going to tell, and I think that if you have a very open dialogue with your cast and crew and everyone gets heard, because essentially it's collaborative, but you're collaborating on what this the director's vision is. And so it was very apparent of just how passionate Prano is, and especially around this subject.
When you're working with Prano in sort of pre-production, what were you keen to find out about Enid and discuss before going into shooting?
For me, it was trying to answer. There's a couple of the questions of like how you kind of approach a character, and it was like, what is driving them? What's their passions? What are they scared of? What are the kind of like the main goals? And for Enid, what was so fascinating about it was this is a character that is dealing with a deeply rooted psychological childhood trauma. And Prano left that for me to kind of research, because that's her personal journey. And so we discussed how much of the event Enid remembers and how much of it she can't. And so it was investigating and researching childhood trauma and how that can manifest into adolescence.
Well, that sounds like quite a challenging sort of bit of prep to do.
Challenging, but also like those are the roles where you're like, there's so much meat to work with, and it's just an excuse for me to just to explore people and explore the mind, and like, it's regardless of if there's a job coming out of it, it's rewarding in itself.
Yeah, and I guess it's something you wouldn't normally do in your day to day. Like, this is a clear project, I love the attention to detail in the film, you know, down to like how it's made, but also does, you know, if you're a film buff, you've heard of the British Board of Film Classification, you know, that legendary certificate that comes on before every movie. Did you talk to real life censors? Did you talk to them and collaborate with them?
Yeah, so Prano put me in touch with a film censor for the BUFC, Carl Tabosky, and so I contacted her and we sat down over Zoom and just kind of had a, like, she just informed me of like how she kind of got into it, how she went about her job, and kind of more like the logistics of like day-to-day what a film censor does. And I think when you demystify that, you can kind of get your head around it. But a lot of, for me, the research was the psychological pain the character goes through, because, you know, the story is ultimately going to be telling the details as regards like the censorship. And so for me, it's just focusing on the character.
Did you bring up any particular films when you were talking that Prano would sort of reference from this period?
Yeah, there was a few. There was like when we were talking about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and at the time I was like, there was controversy as to the way in which actors were being kind of treated on set, and like in order to kind of achieve like those real life scares. And it was more just like a broad stroke conversation over how you achieve certain shots without it having to actually damage someone's psychological mind. You know, it's acting. We don't need to like scare the life out of someone in order to for them to act scared. So it was just these very interesting kind of conversations that you could have with someone.
Well, that sounds like such a unique opportunity to talk to. I always find the BBFC are very mysterious.
The MI5.
Yeah, secret club. And it sort of blows my mind, I guess, just how many films they have to watch, like films that we may never hear of, because they have to review things that go straight to video and DVD and online and all that sort of stuff. I love Michael Smiley, huge fan of Michael, and I loved your scenes together in this. What was it like working with Michael Smiley on a project?
Working with Michael, he is such a joy. He's hilarious. He's the funniest man. so, you know, he spent the whole, like the entire time, he's like, he's just telling stories or, you know, funny jokes. And then all of a sudden he's like Doug Smart and he's this completely other person. And that's just a testimony of just how good of an actor he is. And he's improvising, coming in and out of the scenes. And there was a couple of scenes, I think, when he visits the censor's office for the first time, where he's kind of walking away and he makes some sly comments about Enid. I think that made it in. And those are the little things that you just love when you get to work with an actor that gives more than what's on the page. You know, they do it there and more and then more again.
Do you if someone like Michael comes on and, you know, he starts to do a little bit of improv, do you feel like you need to sort of change how you're playing against him?
Well, yeah, if you're working with anyone who's that good makes you want to step up to the plate and make sure that you're not letting the side down. So yeah, he said to me, he was like, it's just commit and embrace. And that's what you need to do as an actor, is just commit to the moment and embrace changes.
Sounds great. I've been lucky enough to host a couple of Q&A's with Michael, and like, you know, I might as well not be there because it's the one-man show when he's on stage. But I love his work on screen, and it was so nice to see him in this. Do you have a favorite memory from shooting?
I just enjoyed the entire process of making this film. Probably there's a scene where Enid meets with Alice Lee in the forest in this ravine, and we were like filming for about 10 days in this forest, and by day 3 it had been torrential raining like the entire time we were there. So this was a dry ravine to begin with when we kind of rehearsed the day previous to kind of go through and say, this is where you're going to be running down and then this is where you stop. And by the time we got to film that scene, it had turned into like a mud river. And so my character is wearing like this long nightie, this white nightie that she's wearing. And I genuinely got stuck in the mud. So, and also, you know, the character, she's at number 10 in like her psychological breakdown. And when you're given the opportunity, especially as this character of Enid, to kind of push the boundaries of that psychological distortion in a place where audiences haven't seen it before. But also I was so lucky that the actress opposite, Sophia Laporta, who I was acting with, she's phenomenal in that scene. And it was just a really emotionally, I suppose, engaging scene for as an actor to kind of be given the opportunity to explore. And at this point, because Prano is so involved in the scenes, in the sense that she's literally there with you in the scenes, that they kind of built this little hut for her because she becomes so animated and she lives through like all the moments with you. She's like physically living the moments with you as the character. And she thought, like, because she was doing that, she was going to distract us. So they built her this like little mini tent. So I just remember just off the corner of my eye doing that scene with Sophia, and then just seeing this little mini tent with Prano kind of bashing around in it, and just thinking, I was like, I'm just so lucky to be on a project like this where everyone is so passionate and committed to a project.
That's such a fun mental image as well, to imagine, you know, the director kind of bouncing around this
yeah, your little movable tent, director's village.
Where did you shoot the film when you were doing the exteriors? Because yeah, like the sort of forest stuff looks incredible.
Yeah, we shot it all around Leeds. So the censor's office was a town just outside of Leeds, and then the forest was all around Leeds. So it was all shot in Leeds.
I think there's a few scenes where you're sort of walking down some streets, and I was like trying to work out if they were in London or not.
Production design, cinematography, the locations, it has this incredibly nocturnal feel about it. Like, you don't ever kind of get a grander perspective of what kind of is outside of Enid's world. It's become so kind of claustrophobic, and that was like so exciting to watch the film, is that this is a very unique kind of perspective of a part of England that we haven't really seen done before. I was like, I think for me, because you see it written on a page, but you never know how that's going to translate. And I think this is just something that is so visually pleasing.
So it's a really gorgeous film to watch. I wonder, like, when you started to see, you know, finished bits of film coming through, how did you respond? Was it how you imagined it would look, or was there some, you know, when you actually see it all edited together, is that when you can start to appreciate, you know, some of the things like the grading, the lighting, and all of that sort of stuff?
You know what, I was like looking, because we shot on film, it already has that grain filter. It has that very cinematic quality already to it. So there was a couple of just snippets from the dailies that I got kind of saw, because like Prano and Annika, the DOP, have been best friends since college. So I got to see just small little snippets, but I'm not one to kind of watch as the project is going along. You just want to be in it and be there with the character. And then between action and cut, that's your moment to play the character. And then beyond that, it's in the hands of your editor, and then into your sound design, and everyone has their moment of the story that you know, how they're going to shape the story. So, and then you hand it over to the audience, and then they can take what you want. And I think that's such an interesting way to look at filmmaking, is that everyone has a part to play, but it's a collaborative effort, and that includes the audience. It's them interpreting the story.
100%. I think film's kind of like the ultimate, and any sort of production, I suppose, TV as well. And, you know, it's like, it's the ultimate collaborative art form, because it does just physically take hundreds of people to put something together. You know, other art forms can be done solo or in duos and much smaller groups, if you look at music and, you know, sort of visual art. But yeah, I always, you know, and that's why I love staying through the end credits of a film, because it's like, it is hundreds of people working for months and months on some of these things.
Exactly.
Do you like watching your stuff back with an audience? Is that something you'll be doing when Sensor comes to cinemas?
I'd be lying if I said, oh, I can sit there and be like, you can't, because you can't change anything in your, you know, it's not like a play where you go out and you watch it and go, well, tomorrow night, you know, I'm going to really land that piece of dialogue and speed up the third act. With this, it's you kind of have to give over and just sit back, and I do find it really tricky to sit and watch. But with this, it's like this, with this Ian character, like the physicality is so different to me and the way she sounds. And so I was able to watch it. I saw it for the first time, but it was on a laptop in my apartment. I didn't get the opportunity, obviously, with Sundance. So, you know, I needed to see the movie before I could talk about it. <You know? laughs> I can just remember doing it, but I'm like, it could have been edited differently than what you imagined. But yeah, I'm very excited to watch it with an audience and just see, you know, what bits land. And I always find it interesting that when I read a script for the first time, I always take notes on my first impression of the story, and that's going to be the only first impression that you get, because after that you begin to read into things and see things differently. But you'll only ever get to watch it for the first time once.
Absolutely. And that's hugely, hugely important to do. Does it ever surprise you what people sort of respond to from work you've done previously? Like the things that people might come up and mention to you, you're like, wow, that really stuck.
I'm always surprised when people are like, you always play very broken characters. And I'm like, I never see them as like broken characters. I just think that they're interestingly, not fragile is the word, but it's just that they're not your typical hero characters. And I think that what's so interesting about this Enid character is that she's created, she is the hero in her own narrative. She thinks that she is in some way some sort of visual hero trying to protect society from seeing something that they shouldn't. So yeah, I think that's, it's always interesting for people how you interpret a character that you portrayed, but that's it. Art is interpretive, it's not, yeah.
I sort of love that. I love that everybody could watch, you know, 100 people can watch the same thing and everyone's going to come out, take something different away from it.
Yeah. Well, that's it. I think that's what I find so fascinating about this film, is that this is the online response of people watching, because, you know, it went out in America, and just people talking about it online and how they interpret the ending is just, I love it, because it's, you know, that's the idea, is that it continues the conversation.
I guess you know, people are watching it at different times. So every time you sort of log on to, if you're like, you know, social media, you're like, oh, people are talking about this. This is the image they're screen grabbing at the moment.
Everyone's mad about the glasses. Everyone's like, you know, where did you get the big glasses?
And they are. I mean, it is a, I think it's a really distinctive look for a character. And, you know, hopefully come Halloween, maybe there'll be a few Enids popping up at parties.
I love it.
Do you ever, when it comes to bits of costume and props, do you ever get to take anything home? Is that something you like to collect?
Yeah, I do. I sneak a few things, or a few props. I really wanted to take a typewriter from this. I really want to take one of the old Enid's typewriter that she, but you know, a lot of the time things are on are rented from prop houses or costume houses. The glasses in this in particular, I got to keep the jacket. That was really cool. And Saffron, our a costume designer, she did such an amazing job. Like, I just love how the character becomes like so tightly buttoned up to like slowly unraveling, and how she breaks down costumes and just where the character visually starts and ends. It's just complete polar opposites, and it's always very exciting to work with a costume designer who is as collaborative about the character as you are.
Do you, when it comes to something like that, do you have much say in the costume? Like, what do you talk about with the costume designer?
Yeah, I think it's like any good costume designer will make sure that you're coming out, I suppose, from a collaborative point of view, and it's visually and how you wear clothes is, it has to sit right with the character, and you can have an idea of what maybe the character might be wearing, but ultimately everyone has their job to play, and you have to be respectful and hear everyone's opinions fairly. And I think that I was just so lucky that I came into this in Saffron. How I imagined the character when I read it was exactly how she had imagined it, and she sent me through the storyboards, and it was how I imagined it at, you know, tenfold. So I was just so excited to just turn up for the costume fitting and just try on as many high waist pants that were made out of wool as I could. And there was one thing where I'd said to her, I was like, I just really love the idea of this character having glasses, because that for her is almost like her superhero mask, up to a certain point where she takes them off. And where she takes them off, it was like a very pivotal moment for the character, is when she sees Don't Go in the Church for the first time. And that was when the glasses, I just had my head have to come off, because that's when you begin to, that's when the, you know, the cracks begin to creep in.
I guess, for Enid, you know, she needs the glasses to do her job. That's why it's her weapon or something.
Weapon, in this. Yeah. Like, it's filtering. It almost become like this barrier between her and what she's seen. And so it was like just the idea of if that being, and also because I don't wear glasses, I was like, I should wearing glasses in a film.
It's fun, I mean they are iconic, and yeah, I hope we do see some Enids. I'm sure we will. Some, you know, some cinephile Halloween parties. is there anything from your, you know, what you watched when you were prepping with Prano that you'd recommend people watch after or before maybe seeing Censor?
Oh yeah, watch Prano's short film Nasty.
Oh wow, yeah, that's a good way to line up. Absolutely, of course.
See what she's gonna go on and do such amazing work.
No, 100% there. I'm so excited. I mean, I'm glad that Censor gets to play in cinemas, because, you know, seeing it on that big screen, really appreciating, you know, that film grain, the sound design will be incredible. And and she's a name to look out for. Hopefully you guys get to collaborate again on something too.
I hope so. Can you put in a good word for me?
I'll send a message. Thank you so much for talking to us today, Niamh. It's been really, really fun to chat. It's great to talk to a customer at the cinemas, an audience member, as well as someone who's, you know, obviously on screen in this incredible movie.
Oh, it's very welcome. I used to work in my first job after I worked in a pub for years. We were working in the cinema, and it was my favorite job.
Oh wow. Well, if you ever, you know, if you're ever interested, hit me up.
I'll come in then.
We can get you back on the counter.
Noise around the cinema all day long. We're like, oh, why did we tell her to come in?
Huge thank you to Niamh Algar for talking to us. As you heard, Niamh is a big fan of The Picture House, and she actually just watched Black Widow at the cinema before doing the interview with me. It's always nice when you talk to someone who makes films who is just as passionate watching them, and it's so nice to hear that she's been going to the cinema to catch up on latest releases there. As I mentioned, Censor is in cinemas right now, and I highly, highly recommend checking it out. If you enjoyed Censor, we're doing a season at Picture House to celebrate the release of the film called A Terrifying Uprising, and it's a great selection of modern and classic horror films directed by women. We've got St. Maud in there, we've got Pet Sematary, the original Pet Sematary, we've got The Babadook, we've got Raw, and yeah, all of these films. A lot of them I've only seen at home, I've not seen at the cinema myself, so I will be there watching these films. But see Censor, first of all. It's under 90 minutes. It's a joy. And yeah, definitely needs to be seen on the big screen. Big thank you to Kobe Yamanaka for producing this episode, and Maddie Searle for editing. The show is produced by Stripped Media. I've been Sam Clements. If you've enjoyed the show, please rate and review us on iTunes or your Apple Podcasts or your podcatcher of choice. And do subscribe, because we occasionally have bonus episodes in between, like this is a bonus episode in between our main episodes. But we'll be back in September with our next main episode with two guest film critics talking about the big releases of the month. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.